What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast, episode 72. I am one of your co-hosts, Eli Cooper, and I'm joined, as always, by my guy, White Mike Badzik.
White,
how's it going, brother?
Chilling, bro. Good to see you back. You know, you fancy leveling up, going to Puerto Rico for a week. You know, that's cool. Leave us behind. You know, so missed you.
Yeah, man.
But you know, happy you're back.
You know what? We're not going to talk about the Sixers today because they're not on the agenda. But they're very lucky. I was on vacation last week.
I was itching to pot it up.
You know, I mean,
after that,
because they lost before I left, so that was like the perfect time to take a vacation and just forget about the misery that they put me through.
Yeah.
So you know, I went. I got a tan. I don't know if you can really see it in the lighting here. Went and got a tan. Forgot about it, and you know, I'm okay with it.
Okay?
I think it was a necessary.
Well, I've been
a necessary loss. You have, and I've been trying to be optimistic and whatnot. But I think it was a necessary loss. I really do.
Okay,
but you know, and maybe that's something to talk about maybe later in the show.
I think we might touch on that later.
We'll save that a little bit. So, yeah, man. But I had a great time in Puerto Rico. Got a little one-on-one time with the missus. So. Great stuff, man.
Major key.
Yeah. So now that I'm back, we got to talk about the Hawks last night.
Yes.
Tying up the series without Trae Young. And they were leading for pretty much all the game, even when Giannis was healthy. Then Giannis gets hurt in that third quarter with a pretty ugly knee injury. If you haven't heard already, it was a hyperextension, no structural damage, no ACL, no ligament tears, anything like that. But there's no timetable for his return. So it's really going to be how much pain, you know, is he in is essentially going to determine when he comes back. But the Hawks controlled this game from start to finish without Trae Young. Does it tell you more about the Bucks or the Hawks with them tying this game up?
The Bucks for me. The way that they came out last night was just so flat. I think Inside the NBA guys on TNT actually did a really good job of calling it out at halftime. This was before Giannis got hurt. I mean, there was just no energy at all. You would think that a team who has been disappointed the past two seasons like this in an opportunity to take an absolute stranglehold on this series without Trae Young, to go up 3-1 and then have two of the next three in Milwaukee. I mean, the series is basically over if they do that, right?
Yep.
I think we would agree. The series is basically over if they do that. And they should have been able to do that without Trae Young. I mean, they should have been able to do that. I think, you know, the Hawks did play up a level there. Bogdanovich looked like a new version of himself ever since he hurt his leg. This is probably the best he's looked. Lou Williams, this is the best he's looked.
Yeah.
In quite some time, right? I've always, you know, had my questions about him in the playoffs, but he definitely stepped up last night. And the Hawks, you know, they took advantage of, you know, at the beginning of that third quarter, it looked like Milwaukee was going to make a run. It looked like Milwaukee was going to make a run and it was going to at least be close. They had that energy that was missing in the first half. And I don't want to shy away from that they didn't have it in the first half because that killed them ultimately.
Yeah.
But then when they lose Giannis, and that's so deflating. And big ups to the Hawks who capitalized on that very quickly. Almost as soon as he went out, they went on a huge run. And basically within 3 to 4 minutes, the game was over. He even came out of the locker room. I thought for a second he might come back in, but the game had kind of gotten out of hand. It almost like it wasn't. There was no point in him coming back in. Now, they haven't said when he'll come back. But, listen, we have a series here. And Trae Young, you know, he's got this deep bone bruise, which I'm not super familiar with, but it sounds terribly painful. You know, you would think for a guy who's pretty much the offense runs through him almost 100% of the time when he's out there, this is going to be a serious ailment. So we'll see if he's able to go in Game 5 or Game 6. I still think the Bucks should win this series, right? And this is the other thing, too. Like, if you look at these rosters, and if you look at that Game 5, and you said, even if Giannis didn't play at all, Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday should have been able to beat a Trae Young-less Hawks team. They should have been able to be, if those guys are who they're hoping or who they want us to think they are, or who we were hoping them to be if we had high hopes on the Bucks coming into this postseason, they have to be able to win that game against a Trae Youngless Hawks team who was on the brink of their season being over. But kudos to them for fighting back. I think this was all on the Bucks, all on Budenholzer. We've said it time and time again this postseason. I think he should be fired. Even if they win the entire championship, I still think he should be fired. So I think that this was more about the Bucks.
Yeah, I agree. They were lethargic to start the game. And when, like you said, when they finally started to get some momentum there in that third quarter, Giannis gets hurt. And it's like the type of injury that it was where it like scares everyone. That's incredibly deflating to a team. You know what I mean? Like you said. So that, I mean, that just made it 10 times worse. So all the energy that you were building up just gets taken right out of you there.
Sure.
And the Hawks full on took advantage. You know, but I also think this says a lot about the Hawks. It says more about the Bucks, but this Hawks team is very deep.
Yeah.
They're very deep. Everybody who steps on the floor for them offensively is a threat. We saw Cam Reddish come alive.
Love to see him.
And it's great to see him back and healthy and playing again, because that guy has endless amount of potential and talent.
Wait, can I pause right here for 1 second? Cam Reddish came back, looked good, endless amount of potential. Cam Reddish and Trae Young for Luka, who won the trade.
Oh, the Hawks. And who's still playing?
I agree.
Yeah, they absolutely won that trade.
Sounded crazy 4 months ago, 3 months ago.
They absolutely won that trade. And as a reminder, the Hawks are making this playoff run without DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not a big name to casual fans, but like DeAndre Hunter is their best defender, period.
Yep.
He's their best defender. And they're 2-2 in the Eastern Conference Finals without him and Trae Young. That says a lot, man. And we have to give so much credit to Nate McMillan.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, for you to go out there and steal a game, let's be honest, this is a stolen game. Mm-hmm. It's a game that they weren't supposed to win coming in. And for him to do it without two of his top three players, in my opinion, with a Cam Reddish who just came back, and for him to play with that kind of confidence, that says a lot about your coach. That says a lot about the belief this team has in themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm assuming they're going to get Trey back eventually.
I hope.
I think this team's finals bound. I think they're the better team here. I think they are, because at one, I don't see Giannis coming back. Like, that was a pretty significant hyperextension.
So?
Yeah. Knees are hard to, you know, especially hyperextension. Even if there's no structural damage, that's really hard to come back from, because now this, you got to wait for the swelling to go down. And you know, how we all know how important the knee is to everything that you do. So it's like, that's a tough one to come back from. It's a sprained ankle or an ankle bruise is one thing, but a hyperextended knee, I think that's going to cost him a couple of games. And even if he does come back, I'm not sure that they're the better team here. Because like you said about Middleton, you know, he's been playing great.
No.
Up until last night, I think he just didn't step up, you know, when they needed him to. Drew Holiday's been inconsistent on the offensive end. You know, so it's like after Giannis, without Giannis, and if Middleton's not spectacular, the Hawks just have too many weapons.
This is like kind of sad at this point with all these injuries, and it's like, I mean, who are we going to even see in the finals at this point? Like, we really don't know. I mean, the finals might honestly, you know, be Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday versus Paul George and Reggie Jackson at this point. We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that series. But, you know, these injuries are just, you know, one by one, people going down. You just wonder, like, who's going to be left. Now, I think McMillan, I think that's the biggest point that either of us have brought up here. He deserves, you know, they should retroactively give him coach of the year for what he's done with the squad. From where they were to be where they are now, to light a fire under them defensively, and also, you know, get Trey to play a style that we didn't know he was capable of. You know, we kind of were almost writing him off as this score first point guard, not really get guys involved. He's evolved tremendously. And it has transcended the whole team, right? Where now they're all playing this way. They're all buying in to this one message. And I'm not convinced that the Bucks are there. I'm not convinced the Bucks, even to this point, know who they are. You know, if you looked at the Bucks right now and you said, we're coming down the stretch, a minute left, who's taking these shots down the stretch? Who are we starting our offense with down the stretch? The answer was probably Middleton up until this game, certainly after game three when he was spectacular. But you also have Giannis, who's a two-time MVP, who probably wants the ball in those situations. At least you would hope that he wants the ball in those situations coming down the stretch. And if it's not him and it's not Middleton, then you have Jrue Holiday, who has been a disappointment in this postseason, especially offensively, and what he hasn't been able to do with Trae Young defensively, what we thought he would do or had a chance to do. So it's been disappointing for the Bucks, even though I do still think they're in the driver's seat, assuming Giannis comes back. I don't know the details of the injuries. I don't think we've gotten reports on who's coming back when. If Giannis comes back, I think the Bucks are in control here. If he doesn't, I still think the Bucks should win this series. Even with a healthy Trae Young, you would look at this series, you would look at these rosters at least 2 months ago and say the Bucks should still win that series with Middleton and Holiday and you know, with the resumes that some of these guys have. And they just can't figure it out. And that's why I think Budenholzer is to blame here. And Giannis also, with his lack of growth offensively with shooting and playmaking. But that's a topic for another time.
Yeah. I mean, the closer thing should be simple at this point. Middleton's your closer. He's the only one who can create his own shot on a consistent basis. I think, and Giannis after game three was kind of like, yeah, he was the guy that we go to in the clutch. You know what I mean? Like, I think Giannis is kind of accepting the fact that he's not that guy.
And if, you know, but if Middleton is that guy for you, how good is your team? Like, that's the question, right?
Yeah, like, right. Exactly.
He's not a superstar. He's not a 1A superstar. He's not really even a 1B superstar, right?
Yeah, he really should be your third best player.
He's an all-star reserve, which would, you know, put you as like the third best player on a championship team. Most championship teams nowadays, he'd be like your third best player. But because of where we are, because of the season we've had, the postseason we've had, he's, you know, now in this role. So we'll see how he reacts.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Clippers and Suns.
Yeah.
The Clippers went down 3-1, and then Paul George went absolutely berserk, scores 40, shoots 75% from the field, sends Chris Paul to the floor. Sean wasn't very happy about that. But just an incredible game from Paul George. Pulls one back, makes it 3-2. And now game six tonight at home, which is going to be kicking off in about a half hour. Mind you guys, we're recording this on a Wednesday night at around 8:30-ish. So before this game tips off. Are you concerned that the Suns might blow a 3-1 lead here?
Oh, for sure. I'm concerned about
it. Yeah, okay.
And I'm more concerned for Chris Paul himself than I am for any one person on the Suns or for the entire team of the Suns. If Chris Paul blows this 3-1 lead, we will never look at him the same. We already look at him a little bit differently because of the playoff woes. But if he were to blow this to a Kawhi-less team, right? Remember, it's like I feel like the broadcast isn't even talking about it that much, but Kawhi Leonard is not playing. Like, remember that, right? And they could potentially blow this. I could easily see the Clippers winning tonight, and then who knows what happens in a game seven. But I think I'm definitely worried for Chris Paul's legacy. You know, the Clippers here, Paul George has kind of, you know, saved his image, right? With this playoff performance, we kind of had this idea of who we thought he was in the playoffs, and he had lived up to that year after year, or should say lived down to that year after year, right, with his poor play. And he stepped up big time. So maybe he just, you know, he got better when he didn't have that superstar next to him in Kawhi. He could have the ball more. But also, like, other guys are stepping up too. Terrence Mann out of nowhere has emerged as an emerging guy in this league. You know, I don't know if he's ever going to be superstar, but he's definitely a good player. Reggie Jackson.
Mr. You know, October.
Dude, Reggie Jackson has the highest he's the best ISO player in the league, according to statistics. In the regular season and the playoffs now, he's the best ISO player in the league, which is kind of like mind-boggling, right, for who we thought he was, right, for who we thought he was. And now he's become this. Ty Lue, we have said this before, he deserves a lot of credit for what he's done. It's almost like, you know, he enjoys his back against the wall. I heard a good analogy of like he's like the guy at the blackjack table who needs to go down a little bit just to get the blood flowing. And you know, and I think that's who he is at this point of his career. He thrives when the back is against the wall. So I do not think the series is over at all. If the Suns win tonight, I would not be surprised if they close it out. They are the better team. They are the better roster, you know, 1 through 12. But, you know, we've seen this Clippers team not quit now, so I'm starting to believe a little bit.
Yeah, and at home, you know, they're going to have a ton of confidence because essentially you've put yourself in a situation where you win here, and then game seven, home or away, doesn't matter. It's like it's for all the marbles. It's one game for your life.
Yeah.
And at that point, you're just kind of, you know, you can – it's very easy to take it one game at a time, you know, in these 3-1 comebacks when you steal one on the road. Yes. It reminds me of when the Cavs stole one against the Warriors in 2016.
Sure.
That game five, Golden State had at home, and I know, you know, Draymond's out, but that's – you got to close it there. Like, it's very important to close those games out at home because you give a team life when they steal one on the road. Then really all they're thinking is, hey, man, we just got to go win one in our home gym.
Yep.
And then after that, it's just best man wins. Yep. You know what I mean? And that's a lovely situation when you don't even have to really think about winning game seven. You just got to focus on game six. And that's where the Absolutely. Clippers are. And Ty Lue – is a top three coach in this league. He's top three. I don't think I've ever seen anyone make adjustments better than him, that he has in this playoff run. On multiple occasions, they've gone down 2-0. They've come back and have come back to win those series.
Yeah.
And now they're down. They went down 2-0 in this series, stole one, lost one, and then stole one back. If they push it to seven, that's just an incredible testament to what Ty Lue's doing. That five-out offense adjustment that they've made is what's making Reggie Jackson look like, you know, this a superstar. That's what he's playing like in the playoffs, right?
If you just started watching basketball a month ago, Reggie Jackson is the best point guard in the league.
I mean, it's ridiculous. But it's the five-out spacing. And like you said, he's a really good isolation player.
Yeah.
So with all that space, all he has to do is beat one guy, and when the defense collapses, you know, he makes the kick. Or a lot of times you're scared to collapse because he's, you know, they have so much shooting around them. And I thought that was always the biggest issue with the Clippers, is that they didn't quite have enough shooting, you know, to surround Paul George and Kawhi. And now apparently Marcus Morris is a top five shooter in the league. He can't miss anything. Terrence Mann can't miss anything, despite the fact that he was shooting 20% at one point. And all of a sudden, it's like impossible to guard Reggie Jackson because where are you helping from? You know what I mean? So it's like I love the adjustments he's made. Then they went zone last game, and I think that really threw the Suns out of whack, especially to start the game. Because they really couldn't handle the Suns pick and roll this entire series. And for whatever reason, the 2-3 zone really disrupted their pick and roll offense that the Suns love so much. So it was interesting to see the adjustments that he's made so far. Monty Williams has to come up with something. If I was the Clippers, I'd probably stick with the zone in spurts tonight because it worked.
Yeah, I definitely saw it.
I'd stick with that. But Monty Williams has to figure out how they're going to attack it. They got a little stagnant for me. I thought there was opportunities for them to make those, you know, 45-degree cuts when they're running their pick and roll. And I think I saw Jay Crowder do it once. I didn't see anyone else do it for the rest of the game. So I think maybe that's something that they look at. But they've got to make some adjustments, man. I think if they don't close it out tonight, they put a ton of pressure on themselves game seven. Because when you've lost two in a row, it's similar to the Warriors.
Man, I hear the whispers.
Yeah, I mean, it's just in the back of your head. Chris Paul isn't going to be able to sleep if they don't close this game out tonight.
Well, and so Devin Booker, like, possibly has a broken face, right? He's playing with a broken nose. That I can't imagine that's easy to do. But even, like, when you were just listing the Clippers guys and why they've played so good, and it's like Marcus Morris can't miss and Terrence Mann can't miss. It's like, can they sustain this? Like, would this not be like the most improbable finals run
Absolutely.
Possibly ever. And even like another conversation would be like, is this going to be like the two worst teams we've seen match up in a finals? No matter who it is, if it's Suns, if it's Bucks, if it's Hawks, or if it's Clippers, is this going to be the two worst teams? I can't think of a worse. No, I know. I think it's a good matchup. I'll watch them and I'll enjoy the games. I think they match up well against each other. But like, right. Has there ever been like two teams
in the finals
average as the two teams we're going to see?
2018 Cavs. I mean, they had LeBron.
Yeah,
but, they like,
had, but the Warriors though. But so I'm saying like both teams that are going to be in.
Oh, both teams. Oh.
You know what I mean? Like both, and the Cavs like had LeBron too, so it's a little bit different.
Right. You
know, like we're going to see two teams that we really don't. I mean, I still stick with the Lakers would have beat the Suns if AD had not gotten hurt, and if LeBron.
I mean,
was
if they
healthy,
both were healthy, yeah.
I still think the Lakers beat them in the first round. I definitely think the Nets walk through the East if they're healthy. Like, I think we're already comfortable saying we're not going to see the two best teams this year. But I'm like questioning, like, is this the two? You know, is this the two worst teams we've seen in the finals?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, it's someone I can't remember. Someone in the league, one of the NBA players, tweeted that this year's champion will be the healthiest team.
Yeah.
And that's the Suns so far, right? The Suns are the healthiest team, and
so far
that absolutely could be the case. So,
LeBron was right.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, no doubt in my mind. Yeah, he was right.
Yeah,
yeah. So, all right, game six tonight. Who are you taking?
I think the Suns close it out.
I do too. I think the Clippers. I think the Clippers stole one off an incredible night from Paul George. I don't see that happening again.
I just cannot imagine them blowing this. And I think if they lose game six, we really need to watch out for game seven.
That's going
to
be
They might lose. They might lose both if they lose this one tonight. But I do think, like we said, I don't know if the Clippers guys who are making this run happen, besides Paul George, who's been spectacular, I don't know how sustainable this is. And maybe the Suns can do something defensively, make a change, and I think they win tonight.
Agreed. All right, so some new head coaches around the league. A lot of teams decided to start over. You know, a couple teams maybe looking to make their superstars a little happier.
Yep.
Blazers, Celtics, Pacers, and Mavs have all found theirs. Pelicans and Magic are still in their coaching searches. Blazers hired Chauncey Billups, which turned out to be a tad controversial. We'll get to that. Celtics hired is it Ime or do you know how to pronounce his first name? I haven't been able to do it for 20 years.
I'm going to rely on you for that one.
Ime Udoka. I'm going to go with what I've been saying. Ime Udoka, who is, in a relationship with Holly Berry. Or no, I'm sorry. Nia Long.
Oh, Nia Long. Better.
Nia Long's going to be at Celtics games from now on. I'm going to be watching some Celtics games.
I did not know that.
The Pacers hired Rick Carlisle, who obviously just recently left the Mavs. And the Mavs hired former point guard Jason Kidd, who won a championship with them in 2011.
Yeah.
So real quick, question I didn't prepare you for. Who of these four teams made the best hire?
I think of these four teams, I do not love any of these hires from a basketball perspective. Now, I think the Boston one's the best hire because you keep the stars.
Because of Nia Long,
and you know, there'd be a reason to watch Celtic game. Maybe J. Cole shows up at a Celtic game. So, listen, like I think that's the best one from a organization rally the troops perspective, right? So
I agree.
It was important for them to hire a black coach with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and. Kind of like what they've been leading on a social justice movement's platform or, you know, whatever that's worth. I think that's important. From a basketball perspective, I kind of really like Rick Carlisle to the Pacers. I actually think that how they like to play now, the pieces they have fit his kind of a system really well. When you think about Brogdon and Sabonis, and then even adding in a Caris LeVert.
Yeah.
You know, Sabonis, you know, and this is me racially profiling to a degree, but he's got some dirt qualities, Right. So he's got some dirt qualities. I'm sure Carlisle noticed that.
Yeah.
And he was a former Pacers coach as well. So I think I like that. I'm not sure that it makes them a title contender. I don't think any of these hires make these teams title contenders. But I do think it improves their chances and where they sit in the East right now. So I'll go Carlisle.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, of these four hires, Carlisle's the only one who's really a proven head coach, right? Like, Kidd has obviously been a head coach before.
Twice.
Twice.
I do not like the Kidd one. The Kidd is my least favorite one, okay? And I don't know if you like the Kidd one. You might like the Kidd one because it's a point guard.
Okay.
Maybe it makes sense. But I've discussed this before, so this isn't anything new. I'm not a big rehire guy. Fire, get rehired. Fire, get rehired. So he's had two opportunities now. He was with the Bucks. It did not work out. He was with the Nets. It was a huge disappointment and catastrophe. So I like it from he might be able to influence Luka in a positive way, but I don't like it from we've seen him as a head coach before and it did not work out.
Yeah. I thought the Nets gig was, he was set up for failure.
It was a little gimmicky.
Yeah, you know what I mean? They had just brought in Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, and then you hire a first-time head coach to coach these guys. And there was huge expectations surrounding that team, but, like, Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett were so old.
Yes.
You know what I mean? There was just – and Darren Williams was trending downwards.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Brook Lopez was, like, the only one that was actually in his prime on that team. Remember, that's when Brook Lopez was the actual center.
Was a bucket. A bucket for the first season or two.
He was
a bucket in the
low. Not a 7-foot spot up shooter.
Yeah.
Crazy how times have changed. But yeah, you know, that team had on paper looked really good, but they had no chance. You know, who was Paul Pierce going to guard? Kevin Garnett couldn't make a shot, you know, at that point, or couldn't get by anybody, couldn't make a shot. It was bad. So I think he got a raw deal there. I thought he had the Bucks trending upwards. Like, the Bucks, you know, when they had gotten Giannis and Giannis started to turn the corner, was under Jason Kidd at first.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually used to be able to make jump shots when Jason Kidd was his coach.
Yeah.
But then he put on all that muscle. I think that really destroyed his shot. But, you know, they started to trend upwards. And then for whatever reason, I think people thought they should have been better than what they were. And he gets fired. You know, I think the coaches often get too much blame when a team doesn't succeed. That Bucks team is just young and they didn't really have the pieces. You know what I mean? So I thought yeah. 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 I think with the Bucks, I think he got let go a little too soon. You know, I think there's a guy where it's like,
when you look at it.
Yeah. Right. Like, you can make a case that he might've been let go too soon before they really got a chance to, like, take that next step. Whereas if you look at, like, the Sixers, when they went through their process, right? Brett Brown got to see it all the way through. Like, they gave Brett Brown every opportunity. What was he there for, 7 years or something like that? Like, he had
too long.
Yeah, you know, he had every opportunity. They gave him multiple different rosters in the playoffs. He couldn't get it done. And that was just like, we have to make a change. Yep. You know what I mean? And now, you know, after, you know, Doc Rivers comes in, nothing has changed. Now it's time to look at the only relationship left standing, which is Embiid and Simmons. But whatever. The Bucks didn't really give Jason Kidd that opportunity to see it through. Mm-hmm. That's what I don't really love about the NBA is, like, some coaches kind of get hired for the rebuild, and then they don't get to see the rebuild through.
Yeah, football's the same way.
Right, you know what I mean? Now, in some cases, you know, like a Mark Jackson, I think at the time I was super pissed about it. Hindsight being 2020, they made the right decision, right? Yeah, Kerr installed the offense that they needed to run with Curry and Clay.
Absolutely.
And they made the right decision. You know what I mean? But that's rare. I think it's like, you know, you look at Monty Williams and some of the deals that he's gotten. The Pelicans never gave him a shot. You know what I mean? They never put the team around Anthony Davis. You know what I mean? And he's the scapegoat. And now look what he does when he actually has a competent roster, you know, with the talent and depth. He's in the conference finals, you know, possibly the NBA finals. That doesn't mean Monty Williams was a bad coach. He just needed the right team.
Yeah.
You know, especially in the NBA, I think coaching doesn't quite matter as much as it does in, like, college. You know what I mean? Where you're coaching, like, younger guys. In the NBA, it's about the players. If we're being completely honest, a coach has about 35 to 40% of the role in a championship team, if you ask me. He has to put the system in place. He has to have the right rotations. After that,
it's management. It's the game management.
Right, the game management is his job. But if he ain't got the players, that ain't going – it doesn't matter. He could throw out the best offensive schemes. He could throw out the best possible rotations. If he ain't got the players, he ain't got the players. You know what I mean? And that's just how it goes. Okay. So, you know, I think Jason Kidd, this is where it's like with this Mavs team, one, they've got to get him some more pieces. They've got to get, I think, a second guy for Doncic to kind of come off the ball a little bit. I think they need another wing or a guard who can score. Porzingis is a third option at this point in his career. And if he doesn't think that he is, then move him. You know what I mean? So it's like, if he thinks he needs more touches, I'd move him. Cause he hasn't done anything to show that he deserves that. So you got to do what you got to do there. But I think if they can get a decent roster around him, I think Jason Kidd will be a better coach than what we've seen in his past. But like, this is last straw here. Like if he don't get it done with the Mavs, then it's like, all right, Jason, you're an assistant. And that's just
it. And an okay assistant. What about Chauncey?
He's a wild card. You know, he obviously had a high basketball IQ as a player.
I like it. I loved him as a player.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Basketball IQ. You know, when he was the, you know, and the Knicks teams never made it very far, like past the second round. But when he came, he brought a different basketball IQ and culture. I thought he was as big a piece almost as Carmelo. But he was huge for them. And he was huge for those.
Oh, wait, when you say the Knicks, do you mean the Nuggets?
No. The Knicks.
Well, I mean, even look at the Nuggets.
Yeah, even the Nuggets.
With the Nuggets when they had AI and Melo.
Absolutely.
And then traded for Chauncey. They went further with Chauncey Billups than they went with AI, which is, you know, one of the knocks on Allen Iverson. And we very much differ on Allen Iverson because of that.
We don't have to talk about that.
You know, to go back to Chauncey Billups, I mean, he was a super high IQ player. He was like someone that I actually really admired myself as a player. He's a big guard, not super athletic.
Sure.
He won the game and beat guys from shoulders up, as my dad used to say, you know, using this thing. So, you know, that was always something that I really admired about him. Typically that transfers over to coaching. But ultimately this Blazers team is about who they get around Dame or what they're going to do with Dame.
I think
it's time for them to split up the Dame and CJ, especially now that you have Norman Powell. I think he's a much better backcourt fit with Dame because he actually plays defense, right? So I think you've got to move on from CJ. Again, something we'll get on to. Yeah, I mean, CJ's a bucket, and I think CJ, you know, deserves an opportunity to go somewhere else and get more touches because he can flat out score the ball.
Yeah.
You know, so I think the Blazers, despite this hire, I think it's a good hire, and obviously Damian Lillard wanted him.
Did he? Well, now it's so. What's going on with this? Like, first of all, so what I heard from this, and I'm not on Twitter, so you probably know better than me. They hired him. Dame wanted him, and they hired him, and then Dame got a lot of crap on Twitter because they hired a guy who had a sexual assault allegation in the 90s.
Yeah. So it was one person tweeted him and then he responded to it. So Chauncey Billups had in 1997 had a, you know, sexual assault allegation. There was no conviction. I think it was settled outside of court. One of those kind of things.
Sure.
It's been squeaky clean since then for Chauncey Billups. He has had no blemishes on his record. I didn't even know about, and I'm very well plugged in with NBA news. Okay. I had no idea that this allegation was out there. I was 3 years old. And Damian Lillard's like, so someone basically tweeted, I put this on Dame. Because, you know, basically saying this hire. Yeah, and he's like, because Dame knew exactly who he wanted. And Dame was like, hold on, wait a minute. They asked me who I wanted. I gave like a list of like three people. I think it was like Kidd, Billups, and someone else. He gave those are the three. I'd be happy with any of those three guys. Portland hired Chauncey Billups. And then some loser on Twitter is like, I put this on Dame because they assume that Damian Lillard handpicked Chauncey Billups to be their head coach. And he was kind of like, no, that's not what happened. He said, but if you want to put that on me, whatever. Like, and then he went to the front office and he's like, dog, how does this come back on me? He's like, and you know, the relationship there's already been fractured a little bit. Right. He's already frustrated. And now, you know, you hire a guy. And basically Dame was like, dude, I was 7 or 8 years old when that happened. And this was not widely known around the NBA. Like, no one who, first of all, Chauncey Billups isn't a household name. And the guy is like trying to make an excuse. Like this report was out like a week or so before Chauncey got hired. I didn't see it. I didn't see it. And Waj didn't tweet it. I didn't see Shams or anybody talk about this allegation that was out since 19, that was settled. Mind you,
settled
in 1997. Well,
can I just say, like, this is my thing with this. Like, let's just say that Damian Lillard did handpick Chauncey. We still shouldn't be giving him shit for that.
No, that's not his job.
It's one, it's not his job. And also, like, are we never going to give Chauncey Billups a job again? Like, should he not have been with the Clippers before? Should he not have had an assistant GM job? Should he not have worked at ESPN? We're talking about 24 years ago, settled outside of court and not a blemish since. This is, you know, and this is a whole other discussion that we did not have to have on this podcast. Maybe on the All in Politics podcast we can have this discussion. But I think this is a real problem where we're doing this with people. It's just, it's not fair personally. And here we go. You know, these are the, you know, the people who are, maybe I shouldn't go off on this tangent, but the people who are saying don't hire Chauncey Billups because he did this thing 24 years ago, you know, this woke warrior, whoever it is the same person saying we need to hire more black coaches. We need to hire more black coaches. Like, right. This is a black hire in a league that has been desperate for black hires because it is so needed. Right. And here we are complaining about the ones that they do hire.
Yeah, and it's just like, we don't even know what happened in 1997. Like, let's be honest. You know what I mean? We have no clue. Most people have not heard of that allegation. You would have had to dug deep to find
it. I didn't know.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You would have really had to dug deep. And then to try to blame Damian Lillard as if it's his job to do background checks on head coach hires. It's just ridiculous. And, you know, it's what bothers me. It is one thing that bothers me. Cancel culture isn't a real thing, but there are people who believe that it should be. You know what I mean? Like, if we're being realistic, cancel culture doesn't actually exist. It actually kind of makes you more popular.
Oftentimes it
makes you more popular. Like, Kevin Hart is just still the highest selling comedian ever, despite how many times people have tried to cancel him. So it's just like, it doesn't actually exist. But the people who think everybody should be canceled because of one mistake bother me. Like, even if Chauncey Billups did whatever they said he did, right, and he was totally in the wrong, I mean, 24 years of squeaky clean behavior isn't enough to make up for that.
And that's harsh, man. And it was settled. Like,
yeah, I mean, what else do you want to happen? You want him to reopen the case? Like, what do you want? Well, to, what else?
Want him to never have a job again, and to just go off on an island and who knows?
Right. And for them to like blame Dame. Why didn't anyone blame Kawhi when he got put on the staff, or why wasn't Ty Lue's head called when he got put on staff? Why didn't anyone go after Disney when they hired him on ESPN?
Right.
All of a sudden he gets a head. Right. It's just nonsense. It bothers me to my core that it was even remotely blamed on Dame. If you did have a problem with it, the Blazers ownership is who you take that problem to. They're the ones who sign Billups' checks, regardless of what they think about Dame Lillard. Doesn't matter what say he had, they did not have to listen to him. He could be on another team in a couple of weeks, right? So, like, who even, like, right? They could have been like, man, who cares who he wants? We're going in a different direction. So, like, why are we even trying to blame Damian Lillard? It's just ridiculous. You know,
that's crazy.
People have to relax, man. Yeah, it's madness. You know, so I do you think it's enough to keep Dame in town? I mean, I'm assuming they'll get over. I think people will get over the allegation thing. And he's responded to it. He's answered questions about it. And he said it, you know, it's made him a better person. And it's the proof is in the pudding over the last 24 Absolutely. Years.
Definitely.
So, like, if they can get by this, is this enough to make Dame stay in Portland?
I hope so. I hope he stays in Portland. I like to see guys stay with their team. That they're going to have to make moves, though, right? The coaching hire is not – they could have picked the one guy he handpicked if he had a one guy. If they don't add to this roster, it's not going to be enough. And unfortunately, CJ McCollum is proven that he's not enough to be that sidekick. So they're going to have to do something with the roster.
Yeah, and it's not even – like, offensively, CJ's – Sure. A very good number two option, sure. But defensively, if Dame was a better defender, then CJ's okay. But like
both of them
can't play defense. Simple as that. And to me, I think, you know, like I said, I really like Norman Powell. I think he's a 17 to 18 point scorer, right? Yeah, he was a Raptor guy for you. So, you know, he's an 18, maybe even 20 point per game scorer in today's NBA. Who also defends. So. You know, I think it's easy to move CJ McCollum and maybe try to bulk up your defense a little bit, or find a better two way player for him, and I think that would be enough to get him to stay.
Hope so.
All right. So since we're talking about trades,
yep.
Let's play a little game.
Okay.
A little game I came up with today called "Who Says No."
Yes.
All right. So, this is the first time we're playing it here on the pod. So. For those of you listening and watching, here's how it goes. I'm going to throw out some trade scenarios. Mike has not been prepared for any of these. I pulled most of them from Bleacher Report, ESPN, different articles and things like that. So they do match up cap-wise. They are realistic trades that could possibly happen. And we're going to say who says no, all right, based on who's getting what. And if no one says no, then we have a trade accepted.
Boom.
You can answer, say no one says no, and we have ourselves a trade.
All right.
So let's kick it off with my beloved Sixers.
Okay.
The Sixers get from Cleveland Colin Sexton, Kevin Love, and a 2022 first rounder, but with a top 10 protection. The Cavs get Ben Simmons. Who says no? Mind you, I believe the Cavs have a top 5 pick. I forget where they fell in the lottery. Oh, they have the 3rd pick. Cavs have
the third pick.
Guard heavy top of the draft. We're looking at, you know, Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs, Jalen Green, the 3 guys that are likely going to be available at that spot. What are your thoughts?
Top 10 protection.
So if that 2022 pick falls top 10, it stays in Cleveland.
In the top 10 next year, they get to keep the pick?
Correct.
Right. So if the Cavs are in the top, if the Cavs have a top 10 pick next year, they get to keep that pick. And the Sixers don't get it.
Correct.
Because if that's the case, then the Sixers say no. And the Sixers say we can get more for Ben Simmons somewhere else. I think, and I like the move, but also, you know, a lot of teams look at K Love now and they say that's an asset that we're gonna have to, you know, we're doing you the favor by taking that on.
Right.
So that's almost a negative asset for the Cavs. Sexton,
you mean for the Sixers,
and who I am a big fan of, and I think took. For the Sixers, right? The Sixers would be doing the Cavs the favor by taking on Kevin Love. He's not really a trade piece that the Sixers are going. We want Kevin Love. Maybe they do because, you know, who knows what he still has left. He made the Olympic team somehow, some way.
He's in there to make the contracts.
He's got something left. But then you add on Sexton. I think if it was top 3 protected, maybe the Sixers roll the dice.
Okay.
But
right, because you could potentially.
I don't think the Cavs
are
picking out. Side, well, there's also a good chance that the Cavs are picking. There's a high chance the Cavs are in the top 10 again next year, which means they get to keep that pick.
Right.
Maybe top 3 protected, I say yes. Maybe.
Yeah.
But I still think you can get more for Simmons than that.
Wow. Okay. So you don't think his trade value has completely tanked?
I do not think. I think it tanked for a day, but like most things in business and in life and in sports, give it some time and people will remember what he was. I mean, this was the focal point of a James Harden trade 3 months ago. Obviously, the value tanked, but I think a lot of teams still look at him and say, we're willing to give up a lot for him because of what we could potentially build around him.
Right.
Okay. And I don't think Daryl Morey is going to make just any trade. I think he's going to want the top offer.
Top offer. Gotcha. Okay. So I actually liked it. Depending on what else is out there, I would like this trade for the Sixers. I think Sexton would be a great fit for them. I think Kevin Love would be a good fit off the bench, give us like a stretch 4/5. He's only got 2 years left in his deal, so I wouldn't be too worried about the contract. And we were already paying Ben Simmons a ridiculous amount of money for Draymond Green like play. So, you know, I can live with 2 years of Kevin Love's contract. I thought this one was a good one, but if you think the Sixers can get a better deal, then I would also say no if I was the Sixers. Because I think there might be a better deal on the table for him.
Yeah.
I have two more offers for him. So that
let's do those ones first. Let's do those ones first then and just compare.
Okay. So the next one would be Sixers and Blazers.
Okay.
Ben Simmons, CJ McCollum straight up.
Yeah, like I think that's a better trade for the Sixers right there.
I agree.
That's a better trade for the Sixers. Because you don't know what Kevin Love is. That could end up being a reserve place 10 games for you.
Right.
And you have the potential there to lose that protected pick very easily. I'd rather have McCollum than Sexton. So yes. I think that's a better deal.
I agree with that as well. The third one I had was also with the Blazers, but this time we're shooting a little higher. We're going for Dame. Sixers get Damian Lillard. Blazers get Ben Simmons, Maxey, and a 21, 2022, and 2024 first-round pick. So Blazers would essentially be going into rebuild.
Damn.
That's a good haul, I think, for Damian Lillard.
That is a big haul for Damian Lillard. You said Ben Simmons, Maxey, and 3 first-round picks?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know who says no there. I mean, assuming that the Blazers are saying – that we're going to tear this down. Because I think the new move now for these teams who make these big blockbuster trades and trade the superstar is we want a player that we know back. We want a player we know we can build around back. And Ben Simmons is probably potentially that guy if you're looking at it and you're the Blazers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I think that would be, if they're going to tear it down, that's a good trade. I think if they're not going to tear it down, the CJ McCollum trade is really good for them. I think Ben Simmons would be an excellent fit next to Damian Lillard to where he can play more of his role. I think, obviously, he adds a ton of defensive value for them, which they need.
I like that.
Like, that's one of those things where you're sacrificing some points, but you're drastically upgrading your defense and you've needed to. And I think Ben Simmons would have to move to more of like a 4 role. And I think that's what he would flourish in that. So I think that's like a Ben and Dame pick and roll would be pretty lethal when you factor in. You got to double Dame off of pick and rolls now. Ben Simmons Dame being able to and catch. Embiid
would be silly.
That would be lovely. Do you think the Blazers or the Sixers would need to throw in Matisse to get that deal done? Or you think Simmons and Maxey and the picks are enough?
I think that if they need to, they will and they should.
You think they should throw Matisse in if that's
I think asked. You should do anything that they want you to do for Damian
Lillard. For Damian Lillard, yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right. So let's move to your beloved Raptors.
Oh, I like this.
So the Raptors don't have to tear it down yet, right? They don't have to set it on fire.
It's getting close.
So they're going to trade the number 4 pick.
Okay.
And Aaron Baines to OKC for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
OKC says no.
OKC says no?
OKC says no. For sure. OKC says no. Unless they're planning on flipping 4 and whatever else picks they have and trying to make a huge move for number one and getting Cade Cunningham. I think that they like SGA more than they like any player in this draft not named Cade Cunningham, probably.
Yeah.
I love it for the Raptors. I follow the Raptors. Yeah, let's do it. I'm in on that one. I think the Thunder say no, though.
Well, so here's why I think this one goes through if it were to get offered. And here's why. Well, actually, before I say that, I think a lot of that would depend on what kind of offers they get for Siakam. But if this was the offer on the table and the Raptors were not ready to tear it down, I think this goes through. And I think the Thunder would be intrigued to take this because I think they need with the way they've been trading, this is going to be a long rebuild. This is going to be a Sixers-like process for about 5 years. SGA, as good as he is, probably isn't going to want to be on a tanking team for 5 years. And, you know, if they're going to build strictly through the draft, he's going to be older than pretty much everyone he's playing with. And, you know, by the time he's 28, 29, you know what I mean? He would still be playing with 23 and 24-year-olds. You know what I mean? So it's like he doesn't necessarily fit the timeline if you're going to do a slow rebuild like that. So if I'm OKC and I'm like, they didn't get the draft lottery luck that they wanted here. You know, they fell to number six and Houston's pick landed top three. So they didn't get Houston's pick. That's where I'm like, all right, well, I can move up into the top five and give myself a chance at Evan Mobley, or whatever's left of Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs and Jalen Green. And then at six, we still have a shot at Kuminga. We can add two 18 or 19 year olds to play with, you know, some of the young talent we already have, like, the stretch four Alex whatever his name is, you know, with that guy. That's a nice start, and you're getting these guys and they're all on the same timeline as far as like their age. So OKC might be intrigued there, and then they could flip four and six and move up into the top three. So you know what I mean? If they really wanted to do that, if there's a guy
potentially
that they really
like. I still think that to move SGA, because SGA is freaking good.
He's really good.
Yeah, we're not. This isn't, you know, just any young asset. I mean,
right?
He arguably is one of the best players under 25 in the whole league.
Yeah. Yeah. True. That's a tough one.
So I don't know. I'm not sure whose timeline it fits better or worse. I like the move for the Raptors, like I said, but I almost think that like the Thunder would need Siakam and the four pick for SGA. That's how high they probably value him.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. So let's stay on your Raptors. The Warriors call. They're offering Wiggins the seventh pick and the 14th pick Siakam. Who says no?
Can I get Wiseman too?
That's what I was going to ask. I didn't put Wiseman in because I thought that might be a bit much. So you need Wiseman to make the deal.
Well, I don't know if I need Wiseman to make the deal because I'm not huge on Siakam right now. I do think it'd be great if Maple Jordan Wiggins came home to Toronto. I like the idea of that. And then 7 and 14, it's like, you know, the problem is this is a top five draft.
Yes,
this is a top five draft. So almost you would want Wiseman maybe even instead of Wiggins, you know. And then if you do Wiseman instead of Wiggins and you do Wiseman 7 and 14 for Siakam, that probably makes sense for both teams.
Wiggins has to be in because of the contract. His contract has to match up with Siakam's because the Golden State would take on too much salary. So unless they found a third party that would take on Wiggins' contract, that's the only way he can't be in the deal.
You can make that work, I'm sure.
But
the problem is this is a top five draft. And,
yeah.
And, you know, it's like, is Siakam a part of the long-term plans in Toronto? At this point, I doubt it. And if Siakam goes, I'm guessing Lowry goes as well.
Yeah.
So I think personally I would do this trade. I would do this trade if I'm Toronto.
I would definitely ask for Wiseman. Yeah, I'm definitely asking for Wiseman now.
Although
I'd maybe say keep the 14th pick. Yeah, it's probably the lowest that it's going to be. So maybe I say
yes,
and maybe if the Warriors are like, nah, that's too much, I'd say, all right, well, you can keep either the 7th or 14th pick. We'll take one or the other. We don't necessarily need both. We already have a top 5 pick, you know. So, and with that 7th and 14th pick, we're not sure that we're getting a stud. So
I would love to have Wiseman and 4 and 7.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be, that's you want to start a rebuild off right. You get Wiseman and the 4th pick. And the 4th pick, I mean, that could potentially be Jalen Suggs. And then we're talking about Jalen Suggs and James Wiseman to restart this rebuild.
It's a very good rebuild. Sign me up.
I'm just straight.
Yeah, yeah. And I think even if it's not Suggs, it could be Jalen Green, who's going to be in a very good scorer in this league.
I want Suggs personally.
Yeah, I think he's a better fit, especially when you're talking about replacing Kyle Lowry. I think Jalen Suggs is like a hand in glove fit for like a hard nosed kind of guard
I love his game. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think and then the 7th pick, you can kind of take a shot, you know, at a young player, whoever's available. Maybe the kid from Tennessee is still there. Johnson.
Yeah, Deion Johnson.
His stock is rising. Yeah. So
I think that's what I was thinking of actually.
I think if you throw in Wiseman, if Wiseman's not in the deal, I think the Raptors maybe say no. But if he's in the deal, the Warriors are probably saying no unless you take out the 14th pick. I like that one, though.
I agree.
All right, so last one I have.
I like that one, too. I'm kind of hoping for that one.
Last one I have. Dame to the Knicks. Okay. And the Blazers get R.J. Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, Emmanuel Quickley, and then a 21, 2022, and 2023 first-round pick. Who says no?
Well, if Portland gets this offer and the Philly offer, they say no because they'll take the Philly offer.
Okay.
If they don't get the Philly offer, I think – I don't know. I mean, it depends. Mitchell Robinson's really good. R.J. Barrett showed some growth this year. I don't think he's like a centerpiece of building around. I still think Portland says no because they can probably get more.
Yeah, I think that's about as much as the Knicks can possibly offer. For Damian Lillard, if you know they're desperate for a superstar, and I would love a Damian Lillard and Julius Randle pairing in New York. I think that would be a very good duo. I think if the Sixers come knocking with the offer that we discussed earlier, they prefer that one. But I think this might be the second best offer that you get for him, unless the Warriors are offering that Wiggins, Wiseman, and picks package. Maybe that's intriguing to the Blazers. I don't know.
For Dame?
Yeah.
But they're not going to – but the Blazers won't trade Dame to the Warriors. That's just not fair.
That's why I didn't put that in here. I mean, there's trades like that floating around. And I'm just like, one, I don't think a Steph and Dame backcourt is ideal defensively. I think you're just putting Dame in like the same situation that he's in right now. Almost,
but I think you'll take it.
You definitely take it, right? Like, and Dame's not going to complain about playing with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green, but like, that's just unrealistic. So I didn't put that one in here. But that's like the only other team that I think might have the assets to pull off a Dame trade besides the Sixers is maybe the Knicks.
Well, it depends too. Like, if Dame is like, I want to go here.
Yeah, everybody puts
his dick on the table, which he very well might do. A lot of these, that's what they do, right? Like,
right.
So who knows?
I think wouldn't it be crazy if he did that though? Because just last year in the bubble, he's talking about y'all boys switching teams, running away from the grind. Yeah, and I just think that would be a total 360. That's what
they all say before they do it.
Isn't it, though? It's funny. Like, Paul George said he was going to retire in Indiana, OKC, and now the Clippers. He said three different teams he wanted to retire there. And it's just, you know, times change. I get it. But, like, Damian Lillard's, didn't he?
Let's go, Suns.
Damian Lillard's image is really around him being, like, solid. You know what I mean? Like, everybody looks at Damian Lillard as, like, the realest dude in the league. He's not going to ring chase. He'd rather go out ringless than leave Portland. And it's just quickly how that conversation has changed. And I think a lot, no one would be mad if he left. But wouldn't that just kind of be totally contradictory to his image if he did force his way out of Portland?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if he went to, like, the Warriors or forced his way to the Lakers or something crazy like that. If he goes to the Knicks, different story.
Listen,
or even Philly, even Philly.
If Damian Lillard says that he wants to go to the Lakers – There's no way that trade can happen. They have nothing to offer. Like, who's going back in that
trade? You'd be surprised.
I know, but that would just be so clear and obvious that the league is rigged. You know what I mean? Like, people would have a riot, I think,
if that happens. Well, if it does happen, though, we might have the most lit finals of all time if we get Dame, LeBron, and AD versus Kyrie, Harden, and KD. So maybe that wouldn't be so bad, Coop. Especially compared to what we're about to see this year.
I can't even argue with that. I don't know if anyone else has the firepower to build a big three like the Nets just did. So, yeah, maybe it's a necessary evil. Maybe we get, you know.
But that's what we said about the Nets when they were trying to trade Harden. We're like, who the hell are they going to give up? What are they going to give up? And it was like,
that's true.
Well, he wants to go there, so he's going to go there.
Yeah, right, yeah. And the fact that Houston didn't get Caris LeVert in that trade is just – or Allen.
Wow.
It's just mind-blowing. Well, the real
shame is that they didn't get Ben Simmons in that trade. They that trade was on the table, and I think they didn't want to do business with Daryl Morey.
Yeah.
Would be the theory.
Yeah. All right. That concludes our segment of Who Says No. I like this. We should do this all off. We should just do this for an entire podcast.
I love that.
In the off season.
I love that idea. I know Todd would be down with that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But yeah, we appreciate you guys for tuning in to another episode. 72 times you guys have sat down with us for an hour to listen to us talk about sports. So we appreciate you guys tuning in to another episode. Happy birthday shout out to my younger brother who is 24 today. I feel super old.
Robbie.
Yeah, I'm not even sure how that's possible. I thought he's
24.
24 years old, bro. Like,
we've been friends for a while.
Yeah, right. Like, Robbie's like old now. Like, he's like he's a grown up. I don't even know how else to say it. He's graduating in the winter.
Is he a grown up though?
Yeah. Is he? I guess. Yeah, soon. Is he? Soon he'll be a grown up. He's graduating soon. He's gonna be out of the house soon.
Oh boy.
Yeah. He's going to learn how fun adulting is. So, yeah. Yes,
he will. It's not.
Happy birthday, Robbie. But, yeah, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Make sure you turn on those post notifications so you know when new content drops, when we go live, things like that. You can follow us on all of our social media platforms. Twitter @all_in_pod, Facebook and IG, we're All In Network. So you can find us anywhere there to get updates on, you know, new shows, new content, things like that. We got a new All In Politics episode that's going to be coming to you this weekend.
Yes,
we're going to be joining up with them for a podcast. So stay tuned for a new episode of All In Politics coming out this weekend. But thank you guys again for tuning in to another episode. Mike, any last thoughts before we sign off today?
We love you. Hit the subscribe button. Leave a comment on what you guys think about those trades. If you guys think who would accept or decline those trades, who says no? Let us know. If you guys engage, you know, we want to make that a consistent segment on here. We also want your engagement and want to know what you guys think. So appreciate you guys tuning in.
Absolutely. Thank you guys. See you guys next week.